Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Yeah, baby, we are back before a loaded holiday weekend. It is Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. Order Canelo versus Berlanga on PPV.com. Stream it to your phone, to your tablet, to your big screen TV. No subscriptions. There'll be a live chat on Fight Night featuring Chris Algieri, featuring Dan Canobio, that hack, Lance Pugmire, Jim Lampley. It is the best way to order a fight. It is the most fun way to watch a fight, to interact with us, and we will never ask for subscriptions because a lot of these streaming services asked for a subscription. They try to lock you in for a year, not PPV.com. You can go day to day, just like we do in life, day to day, Chris. So order PPV or download PPV, I should say. There will be a link in our bio. There will be a link on YouTube. There will be a link on iTunes for Canelo Berlanga, which is quickly approaching. We are under 2 weeks, just about 2 weeks for Canelo Berlanga. September is going to be just jam-packed. Stars, in a way, who we're going to talk about in this episode. Joshua, Canelo, and Chris Algieri, the biggest star of them all.
Always Chris Algieri. Chris Algieri works every day of every week and every weekend. And
Dan, a third person on this episode already. Dan Canobio is a hack.
Do we ever really get days off? Is that really a thing? I know. My tagline is boxing never sleeps, so neither do we. But man, it's even in the slow month of August, we're still working all the time.
I will give a shout out to Mike Leonardi, who is the director of boxing for MVP, Most Valuable Prospects. I work with him because I call fights for MVP. I'll be calling a fight next Friday, Kevin Brown versus John Bauza, which you can watch on DAZN. And he's like, "Hey, fighter meetings Monday. Can you do that?" And I was like, man, that's Labor Day. Like, I actually am taking a day off on Labor Day. Like, I don't want to do anything boxing related because I'm getting up early Tuesday morning to watch anyway. So to answer your question, I'm taking a few, here and there. Like, this is the time where you take a little breather in the boxing world. If you're a fan, if you're working it.
You know what I'll be doing on Labor Day?
Yeah, going to Vegas.
I'll be in Las Vegas taking a nap so I can call the Inoue fight at, I think our call time is 12:30 a.m.
Well, yeah, so what's the deal? I haven't talked to you about this. When are you flying out to Vegas?
I decided to fly out on Sunday evening
rather than
miss the, you know, the travel craziness of
smart move.
The actual holiday. So I get in super late Sunday night. I get to wake up, have a nice breakfast in Las Vegas, and then kind of just probably chill by the pool, get a little sun, and then take a nap.
What a life.
Take a nap from 4 p.m. until 10 p.m. and then wake up and get dressed and go.
Can you do a day in the life like they do on TikTok of Chris Algieri?
That one actually, that would be funny because it's like a day in the life of calling, being a boxing commentator so people can understand.
I did one. They're fun. I can make
how
one for
ridiculous
you.
The stuff that we have to do is like laying
it's a lot
in bed,
of waiting around.
It's like reading through paperwork, taking a nap, getting dressed. Actually, you know what? Now that I'm speaking it, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's. I did one for MVP, and it was kind of fun, like the fighter meetings and like what goes on the day of, what goes on the day before, and then like the day of, it's literally I was like in my hotel room watching Friends, like going over my notes. Like the day of is just pacing around, waiting for like 6 p.m. to come to call the fights.
I work out a lot. I work out a lot fight weekends because I get like I like to run sprints. It gets me jammed
in the mode.
Oof, I'm like ready. All right, let's go. We're calling some fights. I need to be energetic.
So you'll be on the call for Inoue versus Doheny, which we're going to preview later on. Who are you calling the fight with?
Christina Poncher. We're calling from We're calling from a studio in Las Vegas with our top ranked crew for the international for ESPN International, which is fun. I like that crew.
Yeah, Niowa Inouye back in action against TJ Doheny. That's Tuesday. We'll have a preview for that because we will not have an episode on Monday because it's Labor Day. We'll probably try to do one maybe Tuesday after the fight if, Chris, your juices are still flowing, or maybe even Wednesday next week. I'll keep you guys posted on when we will have episodes next week. There is a lot of headlines. There was a lot of fight news that has come over the wire. Is that still a phrase?
That's the right phrase.
Through the wire, Kanye West, over the wire, since we last recorded, the WBO has ordered Sebastian Fundura to fight Terrence Crawford. Of course, Terrence Crawford is the WBA champion. Fundura is the WBC and WBO champion. I could have got that wrong, whatever. It is a unification bout. It is a fun fight. It is a fight that I give a maybe 5% chance of happening because there's a lot of moving parts here. Samson Lukowicz, who represents Sebastian Fundura, was quoted in a story on Boxing Scene written by our friend Lance Pugmire saying, "We have 30 days to make this fight between Crawford and Fundura. When an organization orders a fight, you have 30 days to come up with a deal, and then they order one, which would be an 80-20 split for Crawford-Fundura. One reason I don't think this fight is going to happen. Another reason I don't think this fight is going to happen is because Lukowicz said, we have 30 days, but I don't expect to hear a single word from Team Crawford until after the Canelo fight, which is September 14th, because Crawford has a Canelo or bust mentality. That's another reason why I don't think this fight's going to happen. And lastly, I don't think it's going to happen is because I think Fundura is going to fight Errol Spence in December. That's been the plan all along. Fundura is with the PBC. Errol Spence is with the PBC. So Fundura is going to vacate that WBO strap, and then Spence and Fundura are going to fight for the WBC. I like the fight in theory, but I don't think it's going to happen, Chris.
It's not happening. I don't see that fight happening. I don't really care to see it either. I'd rather see Spence and Fundura, I'll tell you the truth. And just stylistically, I think the matchup would be more entertaining. but listen, I'm gonna give you guys a little inside boxing live, since that's why we call
twice
it
a week, presented by PBV.com.
Bingo. Whatever Al wants happens.
Al Heyman.
Yes, Al Heyman.
Or as Canelo calls him, Al Heyman.
Oh, whatever Al wants happens. Guys, whatever. Listen, he does not deter from his plans. When he says something, as far-fetched as it seems, it doesn't matter how long it takes, you make it happen. When Spence stepped in the ring with Fundura after that fight with Zou, that fight was locked. That's
right,
the fight
right,
that's
right.
Happening, guys.
Forgot that about that.
That fight's happening. That's the next fight. So I don't care what Samson says. Love Samson, great guy. Hello, Samson. I don't think you listen to our show, but you probably should.
He might. You never know who listens to the show, man. I'm learning more and more people in the business listen to this show.
Well, there's also those secret.
Like, the voyeurs?
The people who, dude, I had so many like world champion guys who would like see me in public and be like, oh, dude, you know, like, and they say something about something I posted. And I'm like, you follow me? And then I look up and they don't follow.
It's like, crazy, okay. Man. It's so crazy. You never know who's listening. I always say that. I feel like it's just us talking
the story,
here.
The story watchers, not the followers.
Right. Exactly. But, never leave comments. No. They just watch the story.
Again, it doesn't matter what Samson says. That's going to be the fight, guys.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of forgot about that. I kind of forgot that Spence got into the ring looking like he was like 220 in there talking about fighting Fundura. That's the thing with PBC is, like you said, Chris, they have plans. They have a giant map out in their PBC office. And now Al Heyman's back in the mix. He's turned his phone back on and he's hands on. And Spence is one of his nearest and dearest clients and one of his main guys. And this has been the plan all along. Spence Fundura was supposed to be October. I'm hearing December. I'm hearing it could be a doubleheader alongside David Benavidez. I hear it could be a doubleheader alongside Pacquiao versus Barrios. And there's a lot of moving parts. Like I said before, the 80-20 split in favor of Crawford, because he's the super champion with the WBO, is probably one reason why Fundura probably wouldn't take this fight, or Team Fundura, I should say, because I think Sebastian would take any fight. He's in such a great spot. He has Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford coming after him or being linked to both of those guys. That's a great spot to be in if you're
Fundura. From a guy who got KO'd dead by Mendoza. Like, it's crazy. That's
why I say this. It's not a sport. This is not a sport of meritocracy. This is not a sport of win your games during the regular season and then get yourself into playoff. This is a business. If you find yourself in the right business scenario, you find yourself in the right weight class with the right promoter, sometimes it really works out for you. And that's the case with Fandora. So
wait,
he's
it was the
probably
same
not
card that Bohochek and Mendoza fought, right?
Yeah, that was the first PBC on PBC.com and Amazon.
Mendoza, who KO'd the guy in the main event who ended up winning and is now in this position. Like, that's how crazy the sport is.
Yeah, another wrinkle of this is the 30-day window that you have to negotiate for this fight, and the fact that Lukowicz says that I do not expect to hear from Team Crawford for 2 weeks until September 15th at the earliest, which would be 1 day after the Canelo fight. Because also in the story by Lance Pugmire on Boxing Scene is that he reached out to Canelo, or Canelo spoke with the media and said, hey, that order means nothing. Crawford Fandora order by the W means nothing to me because I'm Canelo Alvarez. And also, like, a fight with Crawford is not dead to me. It's not out of the possibility. That's the first time Canelo has kind of changed his tune a little bit on a Crawford fight. You know, he says, listen, a Fandora fight means nothing. And I'll sit here and I'll wait. And I'm not saying that Crawford is out of the picture. So that's an interesting wrinkle to all this, is that Canelo is not just pouring cold water on a Crawford fight. He's actually, like, saying it could be a possibility next.
Well, that's one thing about Canelo. Whatever he says, he can pull back whenever he wants. And he does. And he's done it time and time again. So anyone who listens to what Canelo says at any given point in time and holds that to be true is silly at this point. Canelo's a politician. If you watch any politician and you actually believe the things that they're saying, and that's going to last for a couple months, then you're silly. You haven't been paying attention. Kel's the same way. I mean, he's elevated to that point where he understands the news minute. He understands I can say this and then completely go back on it, and his fans are not going to care. Only guys like us pay attention. I actually see these things. Not fighting a Mexican. Okay, and then he fights Munguia. You know, he says these things that are, like, he says them so adamantly, but they're not true. So the fact that he said that, I'm not going to fight Canelo, the Crawford fight doesn't make sense, and then now he's kind of batting it around. I mean, yeah, it's no surprise. There's going to be so much money involved. Also, and we said it on our air, there's not a lot of dance partners for Canelo moving forward, especially the mega fights that he's looking for, in terms of, you know, legacy fights, end of the road fights. He doesn't have that many left. So does he want to just go out fighting the Berlangas, Munguias, Mbilis of the world before he closes shop? Or does he really want to fight the Crawfords, the Bivols, the Benavidezes? We'll see. It's up to him.
There's two roads there. You know, do you want to go out like Mayweather when he ended his professional boxing career, not his exhibition career? But also he had the McGregor fight. I'm not saying the Canelo Crawford fight is on the same level, but
I don't even consider that a real fight. Funny is that? You mentioned his last fight, and I thought Berto, because I don't even consider the McGregor fight real. Wow.
Yeah, but it is real in the fact that it is a golden parachute. It is your last big payday. So is Canelo going to go out, you know, making the 30, 50 million, whatever, he gets 80% of the revenue at the arena to fight Mbilis, to fight Munguia, or does he really want, like, the big one? Does he really want, like, one more, like, $75 to $100 million one, which would be Crawford, which would be Benavidez, if he gets what he wants, if whoever throws the money around to Canelo for a Benavidez fight gives him that ridiculous purse? I don't think it's going to be $200 million. I don't think it's going to be $150 million. It's going to be something, you know, south of that. But yeah, that's interesting in this regard too, with Crawford and Fandora and how this all trickles out. But Crawford, I'm telling you, he has this, like, knowing him and now understanding Bud Crawford's mentality, is I don't think he's going to get up for a Fandora. I don't think he's going to get up for Virgil Ortiz. I really do think he has a Canelo or bust mentality. Like, I could see him just retiring if he doesn't fight Canelo Alvarez. He's made a lot of money. He's not a guy that has a flashy lifestyle. Like, when I talked to him in L.A., you know, he said he's building another house in Nebraska, in the Midwest, has no intentions on moving to L.A. or moving to one of these big cities. So I think Crawford has a Canelo or bust mentality. I don't think he's going to fight any of these guys at 154. I would not be shocked.
I've been saying that. I've gone on record saying that. I got a lot of heat for it, but we'll see. The guy can do whatever he wants, and what he wants is the biggest paydays possible. I'm telling you guys, when you're 37, 36 years old, 36, 37, 38, later, like, you need a big deal. You need something to really get you up. Because going to camp at that time, especially if you have money in the bank, is really tough. It's really tough, really hard. Getting away, time away from your family sucks. And you know, it's different when you're 24 and you're struggling, like you'll do whatever. But when you're 37 and it's time to get back to camp and go, you know, back into the rigors and put myself out there, it's like, yeah, I need something big. I need to feel that urge again. That's why we do it. We do it because we get that hunger, that vibe, that, you know, we're chasing that dragon from the beginning, you know, that we felt in the beginning. So if you're not feeling that, it's really difficult to get up for it and to give the performance that you need to give. So I understand where Crawford's coming from entirely.
Yeah, well said. I mean, like a Virgil Ortiz fight would be great, and they might overpay for that. Turki Yalçın, he might overpay, and then, you know, Crawford is fighting for money at this stage. That's something that Lukowicz was saying throughout that article on Boxing Scene. Is like, I don't believe that Crawford's fighting for the belt anymore. I believe that he's only fighting for money, and as he should. You know, he's 37, like you said. He's in the twilight of his career. It's a prize fighting business. He's one of the top draws, one of the top names, so he should be fighting for money. And
well, he's also he's earned it.
Of course.
He's had a very long career, and he wasn't getting the recognition or the pay that he deserved until he was 35 years old. It's crazy.
He was getting like the top rank, the 4 or 5 million, 3-5, 3-4.
Cool.
To fight Khan and those types.
The level and the skill level that he was at, when you got guys who are making 30 and you're five, and you're like, I'm better than that guy. And that keeps that. I think it helped him actually helped him keep that edge. But there's a reason he has that chip on his shoulder, and there's a reason why he deserves those huge paydays right now. That guy deserves a $50 million fight. It's true.
Yeah, I would love to see it. Like, yeah. Where would you say now with Canelo saying that Canelo Crawford fight, it has a little bit of life? What percentage would you put of that?
I'm probably at 30% now, where I was at zero.
Yeah, Canelo gave it some light. He threw some water on it this past week, and he's smart. He's smart to keep his options open, and we know where Crawford lies. I don't think Crawford-Fundora happens. I do think Fundora-Spence happens. That leaves the Virgil Ortiz's. That leaves Tim Tszyu, who is fighting for a belt. I would like to see Virgil versus Tim Tszyu. I don't know where Tim Tszyu lies in the whole scheme of things with Turki Yalçın and, you know, him not really playing ball with them. So 154 is an interesting division, and we'll see what happens with that. Another fight at 147 that is quote-unquote materializing, Chris, is Boots Ennis versus Brian Norman. It is a unification at 147 that desperately needs to happen. Any unification at 147 has to happen sometime very soon. Brian Norman's dad went on a podcast, I believe it's called Brunch Boxing, and said that Eddie Hearn has sent over two offers representing Boots Ennis to Top Rank. Top Rank has rebuffed both offers, has not offered anything back to Matchroom and Boots Ennis. But I believe Boots versus Norman is probably the best fight you can get at 147 right now, unless you believe Stanionis is better than Norman. But I just believe Norman's just more active. But Ennis Norman, I would welcome that in a second.
Stanionis is definitely better than Norman. I'd rather see much rather see that fight. But this is a necessary fight. Any kind of unification is important. Norman just hasn't been tested at the highest level yet. He hasn't shown. He's got one fight, the Santillon destruction, which I've called both these guys fights before. Norman was having a life and death struggle with Boca Chica, who fought on a Pro Box TV card and lost. So I'm not sold on Norman yet. He's super young. He hasn't had that bigger experience. Stanionis, who also really hasn't had those big fight experiences, he still fought much better opposition. I've seen more of him. I've seen him perform better. So for me, it's Stanionis. But this fight...
What about Berrios?
I think Berrios is a tough nut for anybody in that division. He's tall. He's long. He's improving. He's got Bob Santos with him, who is very, very high on him in terms of what he's been able to do with the gym. He is probably the class of the division when it comes to experience. And I think matters a lot. And tough style. He looked great in that Ugas fight. Tall, long, great jab, hard.
He did look good.
Jab. Right. Looked really good in that fight. So of all of those guys, he has the best win and best performance of anyone. That fight against Ugas. Berrios, okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about it, because Stanionis is just the worst luck and so inactive.
Yeah.
Probably has, you know, the better skills than Barrios and Norman, too. Norman has a good win most recently. Barrios probably has the best win of them all over Ugas, even though Ugas was a little long in the tooth.
He's got a better win than Ennis. That's a big win. That Ugas win is big.
Right. And then according to Ring Magazine's rankings, David Avanesian is ranked fourth. Then after Norman at five, it's a steep fall off at welterweight. This division, and along with 160, has seen better days. But Ennis is giving it some juice, and Eddie Hearn is giving it some juice. That's the whole point of Jerron Ennis signing with Matchroom, is to try to conquer 147, try for Eddie to throw around some dollars, throw around some big money at Norman, throw around some big money at Stanionis and Barrios. Apparently, there were offers out to them too. But Stanionis, last I heard, was like a free agent. No, he's not. Just correct myself on the fly, because you never know who listens to this show. Someone very close to PBC said that Stanionis is still with the PBC. So therefore, like, I can see a Barrios Stanionis, or Barrios is looking at Pacquiao too. So it's just, there's so much going on in this division. But this Norman Ennis fight seems like the one that has the most juice right now, and that's because
good fight,
Eddie Hearn. Yeah, go ahead.
It's a good fight. 32-0, 26-0. You know, with unification, good fight. Make the fight happen.
Philadelphia.
Ennis needs to fight everybody. So everybody needs to go through Ennis. You need to go through Ennis if you're going to be champion. Simple as that. Ennis, I think, is the class of the division. I think he's going to unify the division. Everyone needs to go through Ennis. If you're a world champion in a weight class with Jerron Ennis, you're not a world champion. You need to fight Jerron Ennis to be a world champion at this point. I know everyone got released belts when Crawford went away and people got elevated in emails. That's all bullshit. You got to fight Jerron Ennis if you're going to be a world champion at 147. You cannot be a world champion via email when you have Jerron Ennis in your weight class. You have to fight that guy.
Especially, who knows how long he's going to stay there. Because if you know he's making these offers and they're overpaying, quote unquote, for Brian Norman, or sending very generous offers, so says Eddie Hearn, and no one's going to take him. He's not fighting Karen again. He's not. That's just not going to happen. Like, I know the IBF has ordered that. No one wants to see that fight again. That does not need to happen. So there could become a time where Ennis just jumps up to 154 and throws his hat into that weight class. And then all these guys, Stanionis, Barrios, Norman, like you said, Chris, are, you know, they'll be champions, quote unquote, but you know, they had a time to fight one of the best in the world, in Ennis, and they let that opportunity fall by the wayside. But that is the latest with 147 and that fight materializing. Another fight that is shocking to me that I don't really give a lot of chance of happening, but I would be quite impressed if it happened. Devin Haney and Liam Parro, according to Eddie Hearn, is being discussed for early December in Australia. Parro defeated Subriel Matias to win the IBF title. Haney is the WBC champ in recess after that whole saga with Ryan Garcia. So this would technically be a unification bout. Parro is really good. I think he's vastly underrated. And Devin Haney is Devin Haney. Like, I just don't see this as the comeback fight for Haney. I'd be shocked if he takes it. I would be respect the hell out of him if he takes it, because it's not an easy fight.
I wouldn't be that surprised if they took it.
You wouldn't be that surprised?
No. Okay. Definitely a tough fight. Very, very tough comeback fight. Parro is kind of like, he's been a breakout guy, right? Like, he exposed Subriel Matias for things that boxing insiders actually really knew. Well, I did. You know,
we all did.
Yeah.
Well, you did first, and then you got me onto it.
Yeah. That was a great opportunity. He did what he had to do. He showed real, real world-class talent in that fight. Montana Love exposed a guy who did not deserve to be there at all. You know, huge win, knockout. But I saw what Montana Love was as well. Brock Jarvis, that guy was a zero, and he blasted him out. So he's on this run. He had a split decision with Yomar Alamo, who's a guy that Richardson Hitchens stopped. You know, so yes, he's improving. Yes, he's good. He showed his world class against Subriel Matias. I was never really sold on him. I'm not going to say it's all smoke and mirrors, but I'm not going to say that he is that guy yet. And I think if you really look behind the numbers and watch the fight, it's like, yeah, he's not, I don't think he's that guy. And Devin is, surprisingly good at fighting southpaws. He's fought a bunch of them, even though he's a jabber. Completely shut Prograis down. You know, he's fought a lot of southpaws in his day. Jojo Diaz was another one. Like he's fought a bunch of southpaws. He's really good at that. And they understand that. So styles make fights. That's really important as well. So I think if you look past kind of the numbers, this fight isn't that crazy to think about. What's crazy to me is that you're coming off such a tough fight. And you're coming off a quote-unquote loss, even though it's not on your record. But also he got hurt. So that would be a surprise to me. But in terms of the matchup, it doesn't.
That's the surprising part. I agree. The surprising part is it being in Australia. Like, Devin Haney is going to come back.
Devin Haney has been there twice, though. He has a fan base there as well.
He does have a fan base there, but I was not expecting Haney's first fight back from the Ryan Garcia fight to be this year, number one. I also was not expecting it to be in Australia. I was also not really expecting it to be at 140. This is a guy that was struggling at 140. This is a guy that tweeted after the fight with Ryan Garcia. I understand he was probably very emotional. Is that, you know, I'm not fighting in any weight classes anymore. What's the point of weight classes? I'll fight whatever weight class I want, which obviously was in the heat of the moment or a couple of days after. So I'm a little shocked that he would continue on at 140. There are some names there, and I guess there is some history left to make there in terms of him, you know, winning, picking up more belts, and being three-time. I was waiting for him to say, like, when this report came out and it said Eddie Hearn. It didn't say Devin Haney is looking to fight Liam Pryor. It's just Eddie Hearn speaking on behalf of one of his fighters and throwing out a date, throwing out a venue, throwing out one of his fighters and kind of controlling the narrative. So we've seen a lot of times where fighters respond to that and they'll say cap, or they'll say, like, this is not happening. I was waiting for Devin Haney to tweet that.
I'm sure Eddie got a call immediately after that.
I thought that was could be the case. Devin Haney did tweet three-time. He retweeted someone that said, if Devin beats Pyro in December, he'll be a two-time champ at 140 and former undisputed at 135. Hall of Fame career, 26 years old. Even Floyd can't even say he did that. Devin Haney quote tweets it and says three-time, just to kind of correct him. I'll be a three-time champ at 140. So it's not like he's like pouring cold water on it. It's not like he's saying no. You know, Pyro's dangerous, and this goes to Haney being that guy and me not understanding why he is so hated. Or I do understand a little bit because of his dad, because of, I don't know, the way he acts, to get paid a lot when he maybe shouldn't have early on in his career. But you cannot deny this guy just takes on tough test after tough test. Like, Pyro is the latest guy at 140. He just beat the boogeyman. And now Haney, coming off of a really bad quote-unquote loss slash win, is now going to go into his backyard and fight him there. I don't know. I don't see it happening. I would love to see it. I hope it does, because whenever David Haney gets back into the ring, that's awesome. Like, we need all of our stars to be active. But
Dan, let's be honest, though. Why is this fight even being discussed?
Eddie Hearn?
No. Devin Haney had a mandatory that he...
Yeah, Sandor Martin.
Did not want to fight it. For what reason?
It's very hard to beat.
No. Money. That was his reason.
Oh, for money. Two, Dan.
Money. Money, money, money. Wasn't enough money. The purses that he's used to getting paid were nowhere near or way higher than what was being offered for the purse bid. Because, listen, say what you will about that fight. Yes, it takes off your record. Comes off your record. You don't have a loss. That hurt the market value of Devin Haney as a brand big time. So when that fight was going to be made between him and Sandor, nobody wanted it. So they went to purse bid. Low purse bid. Lowest bid won. Only bid won. And it was low money. And he said, no, I don't want to do that. So I'll relinquish the belt. I'll go get another one later on. If you want to fight for big money, you got to fight tough fights. You're not that guy anymore. You can't fight for big money on easy fights anymore. You got to fight the Liam Pyros of the world. If you want money, if you want to get paid anywhere near what you're used to, you got to take on tough fights. Liam Pyros is a tough fight. So that's another reason why this could be happening. Because listen, if you're talking about dollars and cents, man, you got to fight for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this you become a champion, pick up another belt. It increases your value down the line. Sandor Martin, not only is it really tough out, but it's like going backwards, which is really hard to do. Like, we're just talking about with Crawford going backwards or looking just for Canelo. But Haney, like, he got a taste of that, the big leagues, in terms of money, and with that Ryan Garcia fight, in terms of it being the biggest event of the year. So he's going to want to look for the top dollar. And according to, you know, this, he said, if the deal is right, that was the big part of this story. If the deal is right, Devin Haney said. So if they give him the lion's share of the money to go to Australia, which they should.
He will.
Because, you know, another thing too with Devin Haney is like, he's not the biggest ticket seller. You know, he's had fights in Oakland that they did okay. But it's not like you can put Haney versus Paro somewhere here in the States. It's not going to do the numbers that it can do over there in Australia, because Australia is just hungry for any champ. Like, they had Kambosos, they showed out for him, and his star, you would think, is coming to a close, but they're still talking about Kambosos fighting Liam Paro potentially at 140. That Kambosos is just never going to stop getting chances. But, you know, Paro is their newest guy. Australia loves their fighters. They love their champs. They'll support them. And Devin Haney knows that. And that's a big part of this, too, is him going to Australia and taking that fight and seeing all his friends in Australia once again.
Yeah, it's a hungry market. And Eddie's been trying to find that next star big time because he understands what Australia is about. Top Rank did it, too. You know, it was Jeff Horn. They brought him over there. They brought Pacquiao over there. Pacquiao got robbed by Jeff Horn in Australia, which is crazy. Pacquiao, that Pacquiao has ever been robbed, and he's been robbed multiple times, is wild to me. I mean, yep. The guy was a living legend. And he always took it with stride and class, like crazy. There's a huge market there for fight sports in Australia. And you see every promoter trying to go for that. And this is just Eddie Hearn trying to do it again. And he's hedged his bet nicely. You've got Devin, who might be damaged goods, and you bring him over to Australia, where he's been twice before. He has a bit of a fan base there, and as you said, doesn't really sell over here. Him and Paro are not going to sell anywhere over here. So you put him over there where it's going to sell. You've got the local star, and you got a guy who's been there twice before and has a fan base. Like you said, he's got his friends there. And if it turns out that Devin is shot or he's damaged goods, cool. Liam wins. You got your guy. Now you got the hometown boy getting that win and moving on. Now he's got a big American name under his belt. Bring him back to America. Or just keep doing fights in Australia where there's a huge market. Very, very tactical move by Eddie Hearn as a promoter.
Oh, of course. This is why Eddie's one of the best. He knows what he's doing. I didn't know Eddie and Haney were kind of still working together. They had this very strange working relationship. Where, you know, Hearn was not a big part of the Ryan Garcia buildup. He was there as a kind of a figurehead. He's not part of negotiations. He just did an interview with All the Smoke and Andre Ward, where Hearn was kind of criticizing a lot of things, criticizing the contract, criticizing some of the negotiations. You know, if I was in the room, I would have said, I would have done this. If I was in the room after Ryan, you know, came in overweight and with the drug testing and all that, I would have done that. You know, so it's interesting to see Eddie in the mix once again with Haney, because I thought they had a little bit of a falling out. But Haney's smart. He'll align himself to where the money is. And I put this fight at 27% chance of happening.
So I got the better chance of Crawford Canelo happening than for you, yes, having Haney and Paro happening.
Canelo Crawford has, there's too much money on the line for that, and they're in dire straits. Both those guys, they need each other. They need each other more than anything else. Haney has options. Haney can sit out till April of next year and fight Ryan Garcia in the rematch, and print money. He can wait. He can see anything. Like, he has plenty of options. 25.
Do that, man. Twitter fingers tell you. Twitter fingers tell you what a fighter really wants to do. He wants to fight. He's tired of getting abused. He's tired of getting abused out there, bro.
He probably is. His notifications must be just brutal.
Oof, you got to shut that off. Shut that off. But those Twitter fingers get the clicking. You're starting to get this look. You get a look into that guy, how he really feels. He wants to fight. He wants to get back.
He's definitely chomping at the bit, and he's definitely tired of listening to these clowns out there. Talking down to him. He's tired of listening to the people that had something to say after the win got changed from a loss to a win. And now Paro is there, who you believe is, I wouldn't say for the taking, but it's a winnable fight for Haney.
Tough fight, winnable.
Yeah, so that's the latest for Haney.
I think the carnival situation, the fair, the fair debacle for Haney. I think that pushed him over the edge. He's like, all right, I gotta go out there and whoop some ass because I'm getting raked over the coals here.
Lawyer fees. I gotta make some money because I'm gonna eventually have to pay the civilian who my team messed up. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's the reason why Haney wants to get into the ring.
Dude, if I was that guy, I'd be like ringside seats for the rest of you, bro. I'm good.
I want everything. I would go for money first. And then I would go for definitely some ringside seats. I want to be at Haney Garcia 2, which I do believe will happen next year. I give that like a 84% chance of happening. Haney, Ryan Garcia 2.
That's high. That is very high.
Very high. You don't think that's going to happen? That's one of the easy, most easy baked.
I don't even know we're going to see Ryan fight again, dude. He is.
Oh, he says boxing's boring without him.
He is such a loose cannon. It's ridiculous.
His Twitter's nuts. Like, I think he's noticing, like, he's out of the picture now. Like, we're getting further and further away from that win, getting further and further away of the ruling. Like, people are just not thinking about him, like the boxing fans. And I think that's getting to him a little bit. So he's now, like, tweeting crazy stuff. And he says, boxing's boring without me. Like, let me back in. Like, dude, what is that difference? Like, you wouldn't be fighting right now anyway. You would be probably fighting in December. And you would be, there's no difference what you're doing now if you're banned or if you're like free, quote unquote. Like you would just be sitting around waiting for your next fight, which would probably be December, which I do wish would be the case because I enjoy watching him fight. I don't enjoy all the other stuff, but.
Yeah, but he doesn't fight without all the other stuff. So, Dan, you gotta
drum it back up.
You gotta accept it.
Yeah, he's annoying. Let's get into fight previews. We have a big fight this weekend, big-ish fight this weekend over on DAZN. Diego Pacheco versus Maciek Sulecki over on DAZN. Pacheco, I am very torn on Pacheco. Obviously, he's really good. I'm just curious what his plan is, or the plan is for him, I should say, with Matchroom USA and Pacheco. Like they're giving him these main events. Which I think is great, but I also think it's like he's getting lost in the sauce. I feel like every time it's a Pacheco fight weekend, it's kind of like an afterthought or like it's not like a huge card. I'm sure they sell well, and I think he has a good fan base, and he looks damn good. But maybe like put him on a card with someone like a bigger name, like put him on a Boots Ennis card so he can get some more eyeballs on him. Like, I'm just curious from that standpoint because I think he's going to win on Saturday night. I'm just curious if he's happy with how his career is moving, like what's Matchroom's plan with him? Like what's going on with Diego Pacheco in your opinion?
I've had the chance to interview him a few times, one just 2 days ago, but also I've called a number of his fights for Matchroom and did a couple before the bells interviews with him. Mm-hmm. He's in terms of skills, he's a bad dude. He's a monster for 168, like tall, young, long, too. Wide shoulder. He's 23 years old. So that goes into what I'm going to say about kind of where he's at. He's, and no offense to him, he's a little happy-go-lucky. He's like, yeah, I'm working, I'm doing my thing, I'm focused on what's going on. He just had a baby 6 months ago, so he's a new father, so he's dealing with that, which apparently was an issue with his last performance against Sean McCallman, who I've called before as well, and is a tricky, tricky guy. I think he got undue hate. For that performance, because McCallman's very, very tough and very smart and a tough guy to look good against. And Pacheco got the win, hard fought, but people really wrote him off because of that, which I think is silly. But also, he just had a baby. He was going through all that. Something I've never done, you've never done. It's a tough thing to deal with.
Not that I know of.
Especially as a fighter. So that's a big deal. But also, to your question, Dan, I think he's a little bit just like, hey man, I'm grinding. It'll come my way. I'm young. I got a long way to go. He understands where he's at. You know, he's around Benavidez and he gets to see what that's like. So huge. I think that's a huge feather in the cap for him. And he's biding his time a little bit. And these fights, yeah, they're not getting the most attention, but honestly, it's okay because he's young enough. He's in a division where the way it's looking, like I think he takes over eventually.
Definitely.
I don't think, you know, other than Canelo, I don't see anybody in that weight class beating him right now. And he's not even anywhere near where he's going to develop. And, you know, I asked him because I've been next to him. I've been next to Canelo. I've been next to Berlanga. Pacheco's huge. I'm like, dude, how much longer are we going to be at 68? Are we going to see you at 75? And he said, absolutely. So,
oh wow,
that's an interesting point.
He's waiting in the wings. We're
not only going to see him at 68. We're going to see him at 75. And there's a lot of dance partners in between those two weight classes.
He's waiting in the wings is what you're saying. And this is a nitpick, what my point. You know, he's very good. I'm just curious if he was happy with where he's at and like his development. And I think it's a good development. Like you said, his last fight was a tough one. Now he's got Sulecki in there who this has been in there with some really big names. 32-2. Not the biggest puncher, only has 12 knockouts, but has zero KO losses. He's never been stopped. That's Sulecki. He's been in the ring with Andrade, Gabe Rosado, Danny Jacobs, Jack Culque, who is pretty good. Derek Finley, who was that guy. Remember him?
Broadway boxing circuit. Well. He would catch people, man.
I love Finley.
He would upset some people.
Derek Finley, man. I haven't heard that name in a while because
he fought the Hunter Paramount a few times.
He was like the, oh my God, 36-30, Derek Finley. He fought on Broadway boxing like all the time, and I recalled a lot of his fights. I remember one fight he had a giant hematoma over his head.
Yeah,
and
hematoma.
He fought on. So I think Pacheco is waiting in the wings. It's actually probably a good thing that he's getting these main events, and it's like kind of getting him ready for the big fights. And Matchroom sent out an email from their media day, and it wasn't really talking about the fight so much. It was more along the lines of Pacheco's ready for Munguia, he's ready for Mabili, he's ready for Belanga, he's ready for that level. Like, so it wasn't, you know, they're already looking past this fight because according to DraftKings, Pacheco's minus 1800 favorite. Wow. Over under 6.5. I don't know if I would. It's interesting with the knockout prop. Pacheco minus 450 for a stoppage. You know, like I said, Sulecki's never been stopped. And, you know, Pacheco sometimes, I will say sometimes in that, especially in the last fight, but I didn't know he had some other things going on. It kind of puts a little pressure on himself to look spectacular.
Yep.
And as you know, in baseball, if you try to hit a home run, it's probably not going to happen. In boxing, you try to get a knockout.
He said that in the interview, too. He was trying too hard in that fight. He's like, you know, I was blasting everybody out. Like, and I just thought I was going to do that again. Blasting guys out early. I thought I was going to be able to do it again with McCallum, and like I couldn't, you know, the guy was different. I forced the action too much. He said this fight, he's like, I'm gonna be more patient.
Good. So maybe he will get the stoppage late round stoppage. You can get some value on that,
because the thing about Sulecki's 35, never been stopped, but guess what, he gets dropped in every single one of those fights.
Yes,
he's got a ton of heart. His chin's not great, ton of heart, good conditioning, gets up, fights hard, finishes the fight. But he's been down, if not once, multiple times in every single one of those fights. So does Pacheco put him down and keep him down? I think so.
There's some value there. All right, let's get to the bigger fight. We're going to lump it into this weekend because it's going down on Tuesday morning in Tokyo.
This is fight week, which is so funny when they post that. Fight week.
Fight week. It's an extended fight week. I'm talking about Nioa Inoue. He's back in the ring, pound for pound, number one fighter in the world, going up against TJ Doheny, which is sort of a stay busy fight for Inoue. It's a big reason why I love him, is because he is just very active. He's a huge favorite in this fight. He should be able to get another highlight reel stoppage, but you'll be on the call along with Christina Poncher for ESPN International. Anytime Inoue steps into the ring, it's an automatic must watch. Wake up at the ass crack of dawn, depending on where you are in the world, and watch the master at work, the ring walk, the aura, the highlight reel knockout that usually comes to follow. It's got it all now. And so on Tuesday morning, we'll all be tuned in watching Nioa Inoue most likely pick up a win unless something drastically goes wrong. It's just not much with this fight because Doheny is just going to be so outgunned. But it's just a chance to watch Inoue again, stay busy until he fights again, probably in May, against a top contender.
Yeah, it's a shame because I like TJ. TJ's a tough guy, man. And he had a real nice run back in 2019. When he, you know, became a champion, and he's apparently been on a good run here in Japan, you know, getting some wins, getting some notoriety, walking the streets, people know who he is, which is probably one of the reasons he got this fight. But ultimately, this is the Nioa Inoue show, and TJ doesn't really stand a chance. He's going to be outgunned. He's a little long in the tooth, and Nioa Inoue is Nioa Inoue. So, you know, we're all expecting, and again, no knock on TJ. I'm sorry, buddy, but we want the Inoue train to keep going. We want it to be spectacular. So, you're just the collateral damage at this point. But it should be, and it'll be entertaining because TJ fights. So Henny fights. He's not going to go on there and lay down. He's also not going to go out there and run. He's going to fight. So
yeah, he is going to fight.
I think it will be entertaining at the very least. And hopefully he's getting paid. I mean, out there, they're paying these smaller guys some money. So let's go. And listen, I unfortunately won't be able to enjoy the early morning fight because I'll be calling it and I'll be in a chair.
What time is the call in Vegas? Like your call time in Vegas?
So I think it's 4:30 a.m.
So at least that's for our time.
So I think you guys would be 7:30, right? Is that normally yeah. when it is?
But what time do they want you at the studio?
12:30.
Oh, so you're not even going to sleep that night.
That's why I was saying I'm gonna nap in the afternoon. Right. Like Monday. My Labor Day is gonna be a nap.
Got it. Well, yeah. So you should do it Labor Day. So isn't that what Labor Day is all about? Like acknowledging those that work hard.
I thought it was hot dogs and beers and barbecues, but I guess I can
still do that in Vegas. Go find a hot dog.
I'll be dreaming about it, though. I'll be dreaming about it, my nap.
but going back to Doheny, he is a massive plus 1,700 underdog in this fight. There hasn't been the only bigger underdog in terms of Naoya Inoue opponents was Paul Butler, who was a bigger underdog who famously went the distance with Inoue and took a photo with his team afterwards, kind of like, we may have lost, we won because we went the distance with Inoue. Think with Doheny, 30 fights. He's got 4 losses, but he's never been stopped. But he has been dropped. Been dropped twice by Danny Roman, and he was dropped by Mick Conlon, who I love. But as we know, Mick Conlon's not the biggest puncher. So
neither is Roman.
Right. And he went down twice. So, you know, he is susceptible to go down. Does he make it to the final bell in this fight? I don't think so. The over under is 4.5 rounds. If you want, like, there's no value at all with a Inoue money line or Inoue stoppage is like minus 1,700.
Damn, sorry, man. I got to correct you. I knew it. I was looking it up. Paul Butler didn't go the distance with Inoue.
He didn't? What are you talking about?
No, he didn't. He got stopped in the 11th round.
Where?
I'm looking at it right now.
Why did he take a picture afterwards? I thought they were clowning him.
He made it 11 rounds.
That's even more pathetic than him taking a picture if he went the distance.
Yeah, no, he fought a very defensive stay away, spent most of the fight on the ropes. It was a body shot, you know, toward the end that got
right him. Because Inoue has 8 straight knockouts.
Yes. Yep.
So Paul Butler and his team took a picture afterwards, almost like a celebratory, like a moral victory, because you only got knocked out in the 11th round. That's how good Inoue is.
Yeah, that's how good Inoue is. But yeah, it's funny when you said that. I'm like, I gotta look this up.
I just assumed because of the picture, because I didn't remember much about that fight. It was like another one of these stay busy types of like a ridiculous mandatory. Who was Paul Butler? And what I remember from that fight is the picture afterwards, and like it became like a meme. Like, oh, I gave it a go.
Well, we were all watching it like, oh, this isn't gonna last long. And then like, wow, we're in the 11th round already. These guys are this is still going, and they finally got him. I mean, he was dominating throughout, but see that guy's. Unlike the RNC and the DNC, we live fact check. So
I like how you added both in there. Good for you. Don't let anyone know where we lean. Never. 8 straight stoppages for Inoue. The over under is 4.5 rounds. I think it goes over. The only value here I see is a parlay, which over 4.5 rounds and then a stoppage. I could see a late stoppage. I could see Doheny being crafty, being, you know, very game, not being like Paul Butler, just standing there with the earmuffs on, giving it a go, but a little bit better of a go than Butler. But ultimately, in a way, just finding him, catching him late, whether it's a body shot, whether it's a spectacular knockout. Over 4.5 rounds stoppage, I think it's like plus 125. It's not even that is not huge value, but in a fight with a massive underdog, you're getting something there.
Yeah, I could see corner stoppage. I could see Doheny being super tough, but just being saved. You know, I don't really see how he can be competitive in the fight. Again, no knock on him. It's just super, super tough.
What are some of the other names at 122? According to Ring Magazine, they still have Stephen Fulton. Listed number one. I don't believe he's fighting at the weight class anymore. He's fighting on the Canelo undercard. Could be wrong there. Marlon Topalis is ranked number 2, in a way beat him already. MJ Akhmadaliev, who many want to see. I believe that is the fight. Ranked number 3. Sam Goodman, who I'd like to see get into the ring with Inoue. Ranked 4. Neary is ranked 5. He just beat him. There's Doheny at 7. Alan Picasso, who is a name. It's a funny name because it's Picasso. And he was on that Mayweather exhibition. He's been active, and he's an exciting fighter. He's at 8. These are some of the names at 122. According to Brad Goodman, our guy Lance Pugmire again, who gets another shout-out, who's doing great work, he caught up with Brad Goodman, who is a Hall of Fame matchmaker at Top Rank, and had Brad Goodman give his thoughts on upcoming fights. That was a really cool wrinkle to a story. Yeah, it was really cool to get his thoughts on Canelo, Berlanga, Fury, Usyk, and they asked him about Inoue and Doheny. And obviously he said that, you know, this is Doheny's just completely outgunned, and Inoue is just in a whole nother stratosphere. But he also said that Inoue wants to defend at least 2 or 3 more times at 122. And he said one of those fights might be Junto Nakatani, because Nakatani is asking for it nonstop. Nakatani is at 118. It's an all-Japanese fight. Nakatani believes he can win. He saw something. He's seeing some signs of slippage. I'm putting words in his mouth. He didn't exactly say that, but he probably is thinking it after what Neary did. Nakatani versus Inoue would be freaking awesome. But
we've been giving percentages on whether fights are going to happen or not. I look at that as damn near 90%, 90+%. That fight happened.
Put that in the Tokyo Dome?
Put that in the Tokyo Dome. Dan, you and I are going.
I would love to. I'd love to go to Tokyo.
I'm paying out of pocket. I would donate to Inside Boxing Live. We're going. That's
write it off. Just write it off.
That's going to be.
Do you even know what a write off is?
$10,000 write off.
I got a good accountant. I would love that. I would love, in a way, you know, that's the thing now. In a way, it's just like when you get to the level that he's at, and a lot of fans out there, the biggest knock on him is that, you know, who's he fought and who will he fight, and he needs to fight Tank. There are some names at 122 still. Like, I'd like to see him fight Akhmadaliev. I'd like to see him fight Sam Goodman. But Nakatani is the sexy fight right now at 122 that can be made, because Nakatani just signed with Top Rank. It would be massive over there in Japan. It would be a very hard fight for both guys. Like, it's we're not talking about, minus 1700 here. We're talking, you know, Inoue will be favored, but it will be a really, really fun fight. Then, of course, there's the move to 126, which, you know, according to Brad Goodman, you know, should be coming soon. And you don't need Brad Goodman to tell you that. Like, Inoue is going to do his thing here. He's going to grow into 126, if he hasn't already, and do some work at 126 before it's all said and done, because he is 31. Not saying he's old, but Inoue is getting up there, and we have to tune in every time he fights.
Absolutely. I mean, I like the fact that he's coming out on record and being like, yeah, I got more to do with this at this weight class. I know everyone wants me to push up. And we do that. We do that to everybody. And I don't mean we. I just mean the boxing media, public, whatever. We always just like, oh, we want to push everyone up to the highest weight class possible. Every time a guy wins, it's like, all right, he needs to move up and fight this guy. Relax. Like, there's still other good fighters in the weight class. So I like the fact that Inoue, who goes by the beat of his own drum, as he should, because he is a superstar in our sport, is like, yeah, I got a couple more fights here. And that Nakatani fight just makes too much sense. But I do want to see the Akhmadaliev fight. I do want to see that one.
Yeah, there's still some fun ones at 122 before, you know, Nakatani included. Akhmadaliev, I would rank it Nakatani 1, Akhmadaliev 2, Sam Goodman 3, and then go to 126 and try to tame some of those beasts, which is a really fun division too.
You know, it's funny. I really like the Venado fight for Inoue. Obviously, now I don't, but I like the Angelo Leo fight. But by the time,
Leo just seems so much bigger than Inoue.
He is a lot bigger than Inoue.
Like, when I saw Inoue in Manhattan, I was like, man, that guy's
26 is going to be tough for him, dude. I'm telling you, 26 is going to be tough.
Wow. Yeah. So that's the fight weekend, Labor Day weekend. Got a little bit of fight Saturday night. If you want to tune in, watch Pacheco, future of 168, future of 175.
Definitely should tune in, guys. You should tune in. That's future. Important.
Future of those divisions.
You gotta support the future, and that kid is.
And then Tuesday morning, catch Chris Algieri on the call. Catch Naoya Inoue. Catch forgot who also fighting on that card. Our guy Ishmael Barroso.
Yep.
Everyone forgot about him.
got a tough fight, though.
Oh, man. Is he getting paid? That's all that matters.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a road warrior. He'll go anywhere and do what he has to do. But he doesn't do well on the road. He went to the UK and got knocked out a few times. So, like, this is the inevitable conclusion of this poor man. But, you know, we'll see. Hopefully, the guy can punch like a mother. So let's see what happens.
Let's see if he can find some more magic, Ismael Barroso. Love that. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy Labor Day weekend, because after that, it's full bore with Canelo, Joshua, some big fights in September. Enjoy the weekend. Chris, safe travels to Las Vegas, your home away from home. Everyone, have a great one. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. We out.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.